G'day friends, I'm Anissa Hill and welcome to the Move to Costa Rica podcast. Here we tell the stories of people who have done just that, move to Costa Rica. This week in episode 19, we speak with 50-year-old Canadian David J. McNeil. David talks about getting married on the beach in Costa Rica, the perks of being a digital nomad, and why Costa Rica is a great place for anyone seeking a healthy lifestyle. If you like this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts by searching for Move to Costa Rica podcast. Before we dive in, remember to subscribe for new episodes released every Thursday. Head to www.movetocostaricapodcast.com. Without any further delay, here is your host, Malcolm Hill.
G'day friends, and welcome to the Move to Costa Rica podcast. Today with me, I have David J. McNeil. David, before I get into anything, I'd love you just to give the listeners a little overview of yourself, and we'll take it from there.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me on your podcast, Malcolm. It's nice to see you and chat with you. My story is that my wife Belinda and I live in Toronto. And I've lived in Toronto for 25 years. My wife has lived in Toronto for about a dozen years. She's South African, born and raised. But she immigrated to Toronto on her own many years ago, just a suitcase and a head full of dreams. So she ended up in Toronto, and that's where we met. We met online on Match.com. And within a few years, we were married. And what brought us to Costa Rica was we were married in Costa Rica, not about 15 kilometers from where we live right now.
So the ceremony was in Costa Rica.
That's correct. Yeah. We got married at the Riu Palace. I'm sure you know where that is.
Yeah. So yeah.
It's probably about 15K from here.
And it's beautiful. It's like, it's on this amazing beach called Marapalo Beach. And it's as picturesque as you can imagine.
It is gorgeous. And we were married right on the beach there with 30 friends and family members who came to visit. So it was pretty spectacular.
What a wedding, David. How long did it take to decide, like, no, we're not going to get married in Canada. We're going to go to Costa Rica to get married. That's a big decision.
You know what? We had never discussed getting married in Canada. We always talked about a beach wedding. It was something that we wanted to do. But having said that, we had a small ceremony at City Hall in Toronto just because it meant that a few of our friends that were not able to join us here in Costa Rica for a variety of reasons would be able to take part in a ceremony. And we were going to need the official documents, and we figured we might as well get it done in Toronto. So that's what we did. That was 2 years ago. Everything happened very quickly.
David, I wanted to read off something I read on your Instagram, which people do, but it says, you wear many hats. You're a husband, an actor, a writer, a producer, a scuba diver, a goofball, and proudly bilingual. And I don't know any actors at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I am curious, which I think perhaps there's a lot of people like me who don't know any actors. What is life really like working in the entertainment industry?
Well, working in the entertainment industry is a lot of fun. And one of the things that I love about it is that I do something different almost every day, it seems. The last time I had a 9-to-5 job, or not, I shouldn't say that. I do a lot of contract work. But last time I had a boss, that I had to report to every day was about 20 years ago. I've been a freelancer since then. So like I said in my Instagram bio there, that I do wear a lot of different hats. And the biggest hat I wear is as a video producer for one of the big telecoms in Canada. I have a partner, and we produce television commercials for a company called Bell. And so if you're watching their service in Canada and you see a commercial for a 30-second commercial for a Hollywood film, we produced it. And now I produce those from here in Costa Rica. And I also work as a voiceover artist, which is why I have this very nice microphone that I use for recording at home. And then also when I'm back in Toronto, because we The plan is to go back to Toronto during the summer, which is when the bulk of the production work happens in film and television. When I get back in Toronto, I get to audition for television projects and film projects. So that's a really fun opportunity. So that's kind of what my life is like.
It's very much a you've got to make it happen type career, you know? Like you are your boss and you're scheduling your time and you're getting your jobs and not everyone can do that. So, good on you. Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, it really is, if working in the entertainment industry, unless you've got a structured 9-to-5 you've got to be a bit of a hustler. You're always looking for the next thing. But luckily for me, I've had some clients now that I've had for quite a while. So, I've gotten to the point where I don't stress about it as much as I used to when I was younger, but you still have to make sure that your clients are happy and you still have to make sure that you've got new clients that are coming in regularly. And just in case you end up losing a contract or somebody decides that they don't want to produce a product that you produce for them anymore. You got to keep moving.
And you can do this completely remote from anywhere?
It seems that is the case. I have had some issues here where, power outages have been an issue. We were trying to do this podcast a few days ago, but there was a major power outage in town. So we were disconnected that way. And then I have had issues in the past too, where, the internet has gone out for a day or two and then we had to get creative, to keep in touch with clients. But having said that, those are problems that, you could have back, I could have had in Toronto. It's hard to tell how often our internet went out on a lot of days because I'd be out, but you'd come home and if your microwave was flashing, not the internet, but the power, if you come home and the microwave is flashing, you realize, oh, the power went out here at some point. You would have noticed it if you were at home working, but you don't notice it so much. But now that we're here all the time at a place in Costa Rica, you're well aware of when power goes out and when the internet goes down for a bit.
You and Belinda got married on the beach here in Costa Rica 2 years ago, and it was October last year that you guys decided to relocate here. I mean, some people, they plan diligently before moving anywhere and others kind of just like make a decision. What went into that moving preparation and that decision?
What happened was we got married. We went home. We had no plans to change anything about how we were living our lives. But we got home and we had a beautiful condo overlooking Lake Ontario in Toronto. One of the best views you could have in that part of the country. And so we got home and there was a flyer in our mailbox that said that somebody upstairs in our building had sold the same condo for twice what we had paid for it 3 years ago, or 3 years prior. And, that was interesting because we had really started our lives over. We had just gotten married. We were, in a second relationship. We had a new mortgage and, so everything was kind of starting over in a way. And we looked at that and we thought, well, perhaps this could be a real opportunity for us. So we talked about it and we decided that we were going to sell our place and we were going to take advantage of that huge market that our condo had made. But what were we going to do was the question. We wanted to get a place. We were talking about getting a place down here in Costa Rica, but we wanted to live in Toronto during the summer as well. So we decided that rather than buy another smaller but very expensive condo in Toronto, we would do like a lot of our friends have done. We decided to buy a boat, not a canoe, but we bought a 41-foot boat with two bedrooms and two bathrooms and quite a bit of room on it, but cheaper than buy a condo. So that's what we did. So when we go back to Toronto during the summer, we drop the boat into the water and we live there at a marina downtown. And then at the end of the summer in October, we pull it out, put it on blocks, and then we fly to Costa Rica, which is the plan going forward. Obviously, that plan changed this year when COVID-19 hit. We thought it was a pretty great idea. I mean, the one thing about it is that it meant that unless we become wealthy by winning a lottery or some other way, there's no way we could buy back into that market in Toronto. It's just too expensive at this point. But that, you know, we gave that up because of everything else that we're being offered. And as you just said, when we go back to Toronto, we still put our boat in and we're right downtown. You know, we have that million-dollar view or whatever you want to call it of the city and everything that it offers, while paying a fraction of what we would pay, you know, still paying the mortgage there, not a fraction, but a lot less than what we would pay paying the mortgage that we were paying downtown. And then we get to be here the rest of the year, which is pretty spectacular.
Very cool setup, David. And you're the first person on any of these podcasts who has like the second home as a boat. So nice, mate.
It has its challenges. But it's pretty beautiful as well, though.
My sister and brother-in-law, they live on a 51-foot boat with their four kids.
Yeah.
And sailing in the Pacific, and sometimes like things are just constantly going wrong on boats. It's often the challenge.
it can be dicey. I mean, you know, it's like living in an RV, right? You have to manage your own waste system. You have to pump out your toilets and you've got to manage the water that comes into the boat, your electricity and those things can go very wrong sometimes. So, but you know, who is it you said? Did you say your brother-in-law?
My sister and brother-in-law. Yeah.
Yeah. Your sister and brother-in-law. But you know, so they have, having that many kids living on a boat, I mean, you can do it.
It's possible. And I see them do it. I don't know if I could do it. it's interesting. The kids are between like 11 and 5 years old, or 11 and 6 years old too. So it's like a very high energy little area.
Yeah.
I guess I should ask them about that one day.
You know, it's got its challenges, like you said. But having said that, we only live there during the summer. We have friends that live there in their boats at this marina. It's a 12-month marina. So, you know, we have friends that live through Canadian winters on their boats. I could not do that. That's too much for me. It's too much.
David, coming back to coming down here to Costa Rica, for you and your wife, when did that conversation begin? Because obviously with the sale of your property at a high value, you mentioned that was like that was probably unexpected at the time. You had the option to probably go to many different warm, beautiful places. Why here, mate?
Well, I'd been to other warm, beautiful places, and none of them ever jumped out as a place where I would live. You know, in Mexico, I might have at one point, but, you know, with a lot of the stuff that's been happening in the news over the past couple of years, that seemed less appealing. Having said that, we have friends that have places in Mexico and they love it. We didn't really see any other place that we'd really fallen in love with, but we really did love Costa Rica, having been married here and having had the time to stick around a week after the wedding and tour around a bit. And the other funny thing was, you know, this is how life works sometimes. I guess they call it kismet. But while we were here after our wedding, like I said, we stuck around on our own for a week and we did some touring on our own. And we came to Coco twice. And one of the reasons we came to Coco was we went out on the Marlin Del Rey catamaran. And off, you know, it's a booze cruise that a lot of people go out on when they visit here. So we went out on that one afternoon. And while we were out there, we met another couple from Canada. We recognized, you know, we heard them talking. We thought, oh, they sound like Canadians. So we started chatting them up, and they, their names are, Roland and Nadine Tipper, and they're real estate agents here in Coco. So it was kind of funny that we met real estate agents, and I kept up with them after that, not knowing that we would ever be doing anything like this. When I say we went back to Toronto, just thinking we were going to go back to our lives after getting married, and, you know, probably continue living the way we had for a long time. And then just so we got a bit of a lightning bolt when we got that flyer, and we started thinking, why, you know, we don't really need to continue to live the same way. We should maybe try to shake it up and have different experiences. Part of that too, for me, with the thinking was working as an artist and an actor, is you want to have more things to draw on. Maybe living in the same city for 25 years and then maybe thinking you're going to do it for another 15 or whatever. you know, how many new experiences am I going to be able to draw on to use? You know, I wanted to be something aside from a Canadian guy. You know, I wanted to be a Canadian guy who lived in other places. So, you know, we also have the opportunity owning our place here. If we wanted to rent it out, we could take off and go visit some other places and maybe swap houses or swap condos with other people and use that as an excuse to experience more. So that was part of the thinking as well. Just wanted to, you know, try something different.
Did you have any kind of mental hurdles that you felt like you needed to overcome before pulling the trigger? Or was it like you had that sense of, you know, we can do this. We can get out of Toronto. We can live in a different place. Like, was it pretty easy or was it like a process?
Psychologically, it was pretty easy. I feel like as soon as we decided that we wanted to do this, I liken it to, you know, dating somebody and, you know, falling out of love with them. And the minute that happens, you just don't want to see them anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you just want to move on. Right. And it kind of, we love this place that we lived in Toronto. It was a gorgeous condo and we did a lot of work on it to fix it up. And it was just such an amazing place to live. But as soon as we decided we were going to do this other thing, it was like, oh my God, I can't wait to get out of this dump. You know what I mean? That's the psychological switch that gets turned on that makes you think, you know, the next thing is the thing. To answer your question, there wasn't any big psychological hurdles. Kind of once we decided we were going to go, the big thing was a lot of people do something like this with a 5-year plan. And we had sold our place and bought a boat and we're moving onto the boat, within, 8 months. So
yeah, that's quick.
Yeah, yeah.
After 25 years in a city, in one place too, that's like that's a lot of change.
Yeah. there was many months of people showing up at my door to purchase items that I had put up on Facebook Marketplace or all the other services. Just a never ending, you know, list of things that needed to be done quickly. And then, you know, selling our place, going out, traveling across our province in the car, in the winter, looking for a boat, because, you know, boats are often in remote places. And if you're shopping in the winter, they're often sitting on wood blocks and they're wrapped in plastic. So you're climbing up ladders and cutting through plastic sheeting to get into a boat that's been sitting there for a long time. And, it's either freezing cold or so it's a lot of work. And then oftentimes you could drive 4 hours to go see a boat and find out it's a nightmare of a vessel and then turn around and drive back. So it was mostly a lot of work stepping through all the hoops we needed to step through to make this happen.
But
psychologically, I feel like there was no going back.
You guys are on it. Some people have huge support from all their friends and family network before making a big life decision like that.
Mm-hmm.
And others don't. How was it for you two?
Okay. Well, there was two reactions. The one reaction was from our friends, and they were just like, wow, we're envious. This is amazing. How are you going to pull this off? That was the reaction. Everybody was like, I wish I could do that. Then the other reaction was when we told my parents on the phone, they were very quiet and they didn't say much about it. And we told them and they said, okay. And then I called my mom back the next day and I said, so how do you feel about about all this? Your reaction was a bit muted. And she said, well, your father and I are just worried that you might end up chopped up and found in a suitcase.
What?
And I said, why on earth would you think something like that? And she said, well, we're worried. We don't know how safe Costa Rica is, so we're worried. And I said, well, but why would you specifically mention something like that? And she said, well, because your father and I have a friend who was found chopped up and found in a suitcase. And I was like, well, I hadn't heard that story before. It wasn't somebody who was like one of their close friends, because I would have. But I guess they knew somebody who lived in Mexico, who was wealthy and was flaunting his wealth quite a bit. And somebody took advantage of that situation. So that was a story she had heard about somebody she knew who had moved to this part of the world. So I get that, you know, but we reassured her that Costa Rica was very safe and sort of talked to her about, you know, what crime there is here, because there's crime everywhere, but it's mostly petty crime. There's not really, you don't really hear much about violent crime here, that sort of thing. So it was a discussion we had. It was something that they were worried about. And then later that year, when we found a place and we came down to sign for it, to close on the deal, my wife wasn't able to come down because she had a work commitment, but I brought my parents down with me, and they fell in love with Costa Rica and specifically Playa del Coco. So they were less concerned about the suitcase scenario after that.
That's the most strange fear about moving to Costa Rica I've ever heard from anyone, David.
Yeah.
Good work. I mean, I can understand it because you don't know what you don't know, right? I mean, before I'd ever been to Central America, my views of Central America were totally different as well. Yeah. So it's totally understandable. You arrived in Costa Rica in October last year, and the plan was to do 6 months here and then 6 months in Toronto, like you said. The pandemic has drastically changed those plans, and you guys have been here now for 10 months. How did you bring down as many things as you felt you needed to?
We're fine. I mean, you know, as you know, and a lot of your listeners will know, because probably they may be they're interested enough in Costa Rica or maybe moving here themselves that they're aware of how it works. Basically, you know, I would say like 95% of the houses that are up for sale include all of the furniture. So that's not an issue. We moved into a place that was fully furnished, you know, and it's a funny thing. You open up the cupboards here and there was three coffee makers and, you know, two blenders and, you know, we ended up giving away so much stuff because there were so many small appliances and all that sort of stuff. So everything was ready to go. You know, it wasn't necessarily decorated to our taste, but you know, that takes some time. Then we brought down a lot of our own stuff. I even went out and bought, like, we're Canadian, so I went and bought a big hockey bag for hockey gear and filled it with all kinds of stuff. And we had suitcases with things. I brought down speakers, all kinds of speakers and stuff like that, so that I'd make sure that I had good music here and good audio. And clothes, you know, the things that are sort of surprised us were a lot of the summer clothes that we had from Canada. Don't get me wrong, if you haven't been to Canada, it gets very hot in the summer. But not as hot as it does here. And so I had a lot of cotton t-shirts that were a little bit too thick for Costa Rica. So, you know, a lot of those either became tank tops or just aren't worn. And then we bought, you know, lighter weight t-shirts. There's some products that we're used to back home in North America that we're always looking for. You always hear people talking about that. Sometimes you get friends to bring them down. One of the favorite alcoholic drinks in Canada is like the Bloody Mary, but it's a Bloody Caesar. And they sell Clamato juice here, which is what you mix. But when you make one of those, traditionally, you're supposed to rim the glass with celery salt. Now, they don't sell celery salt here. But I had a friend back home who came down to visit, and he brought us a whole kit, a rimmer kit with all these different celery salts and a plastic thing that you put all the salt in. And so little things like that you know, creature comforts that you're used to from back home that people who come to visit you often will bring you.
David, you mentioned that you're bilingual. What is your second language?
French. I grew up in the French school system. Actually, I didn't study English or take any courses in English until I was in grade 10.
Did you grow up? You grew up in a French speaking part of Canada, I imagine.
Well, I grew up in the capital of Canada, and my father worked for the federal government, and a lot of people who live in that city speak French as well, because if you want to work for the federal government, it's a requirement that you speak French, because all the services are presented to the public in the two official languages, right? So that's how it works there.
So, I didn't know it was a government requirement to be bilingual. That's cool.
Well, more or less, if you want to work for the federal government, you have to be bilingual. Doesn't mean that everybody in the city of Ottawa is bilingual, but it means that if you are not fluently bilingual, that can be a serious glass ceiling for you. You know, you're not going to be able to ascend in your workplace as high as you might like if you don't speak two languages.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, those are the requirements of the job.
Yeah. But having said that, I mean, that's not the reason I speak French. It's because my mother is French Canadian. And so she grew up in the French school system. And my parents decided that they were going to put me in the French school system, that would be a great asset to me later. And it has been. I still work today in French. I work for companies in Canada that a French broadcaster particularly. And I occasionally even do voice work in French. So it's really paid off.
It's a massive step up in life. Mm-hmm. When I was really young, I listened to some audiobook that was about positive things, and the gentleman presenting it said that one of the best skills you can develop is having another language, because it just mm-hmm. it changes the way you think, and it just opens you up to so much. You've just got a lot bigger earning potential because you can do so many more things, and you can meet so many more people, and yeah, it's great.
The other thing too is, I'm learning how to speak. I'd studied Spanish before. My Spanish is okay. I need to really do some more work on that. But you know, we speak Spanish quite a bit here with you know, people we know. The other thing too, I think about having a second language is it can be very beneficial, and that includes also being a musician. Like if you read music or you can play music, just being able to switch over to another way of thinking is also good for your brain. And scientists have proven that you can ward off some forms of dementia and possibly Alzheimer's if you speak more than a language, because you're constantly you're working your brain like a muscle.
Yeah,
by switching over quite a bit. I don't know. How's your Spanish?
No, yeah, well, I speak Spanish a lot of the day these days. And we've been here for 4 years now. So we had 3.5 of those years until COVID working and speaking in Spanish all day long. And that was really helpful, obviously. And I definitely feel as though it makes thinking critically a little easier, because you just feel like you've got a whole wider perspective of a whole different way of thinking, because thinking in a different language almost makes you think like it's not just a translation. There's a different way of thinking with every language, I think, in a way.
Yeah.
And it's really helpful. How have you found the transition into speaking Spanish here? Have you been able to rely on some of the Latin roots of French to build a vocabulary?
For sure. I mean, there are periods that, you know, sometimes I'll run into somebody and I'll start speaking Spanish. Now, if I can't think of the word, I'll use the French word and tweak it. And oftentimes I'm right, because the languages are pretty, you know, there are a lot of similarities. So that is helpful. If you speak one of the quote unquote romantic languages, picking up one of the others is a lot easier than picking up, a language that is, you know, an Asian language or something that's drastically different.
Yeah, people ask me, like, what would be the easiest language to learn other than English if English is your only language? And I sometimes think, well, it's probably going to be Spanish, because everything's pronounced phonetically. The alphabet's very similar. Mm-hmm. If you can learn the pronunciation, you can say any word. Unlike if you learn in French, you have to learn the pronunciation for each word specifically. Yeah. In English, you have to somewhat learn the pronunciation for each word specifically. And Spanish has its challenges, but it has its easy parts too, which is good.
Yeah. Well, one of the challenges with Spanish, and it's less of a challenge for me because I speak French and it's done the same way, is that words they're either male or female, right? That doesn't exist in the English language. People and animals are male or female, but not words. So this part of learning the language is figuring out which words are male words and which words are female words, right? So that's probably I think a lot of people, that's probably one of the biggest challenges, right?
It still is for me. I mean, there's all those words where, like, it ends in an A, so you think it's a female word, but then it's, you know, it's one of those false friends, as they say.
Yeah.
And anyway, it's all good fun.
Yeah.
Your health has improved drastically since leaving Canada. I saw a before and after shot online, and that for me, like, fitness has been a big part of my life for a long time, and I feel like it's a very critical part to to feeling good and being happy. What have you changed in your day-to-day routine since moving here to Costa Rica?
In day-to-day routine, I can say that, you know, one of the big things is that you can just always go outside and do, you know, and go for walks or, you know, if you're a runner, go for a run or whatever. The big thing that I've been doing is working out with a personal trainer 3 times a week. And we do that on the beach without weights, just using our own body weight. I've been working out with a guy named Paul Dixon. He's been fantastic. He's a former Navy SEAL, and he's worked out a pretty good program for getting into shape, like I said, without having to use weights or machines. So we do that at the beach 3 days a week, 10 in the morning. And what's better than that? Standing out, looking out at the ocean, watching people go by, and, you know, enjoy their lives on the ocean. It's an amazing way to do it. And so that's been a huge thing. Like I said, we can go out and walk and whenever we want. It's not like back home where you kind of, you know, in Toronto, you're mostly staying indoors for the winter because of the cold. I think that's the big thing, is just you can go out and do whatever you want, enjoy the great outdoors 12 months a year. You know, the rainy season is the rainy season, but it only rains for a little bit every day, and then it dries up and it's sunny and you're back at it.
Yeah, you're right. Like, today we're in one of the wettest times. Well, it's probably one of the wettest weeks of the year right now. Mm-hmm. And this morning early, it was still dry. There wasn't any rain yet. And I was able to go for a walk and then take my son to the beach all before it started raining. And yeah, it is good here with that. You really can enjoy it every day of the year. It's brilliant.
Yeah. So you're yes, because you're less accustomed to that because you're not used to having a, you know, a winter that shuts down half of your life. I shouldn't say that, because Canadians do get out and enjoy the great outdoors. We, you know, we ski, we do all kinds of winter activities, but still, you know, if you're not out doing those activities, you're not necessarily rushing out to go for a walk all the time if it's 30 below zero.
David, you've got a podcast called Cool Story. Mm-hmm. And based on what I can tell, it's a relatively recent project that you've launched. Yeah. I'd love you to share with the listeners a little about that, as they are obviously podcast listeners, if they've got this far through this. Mm-hmm. And you tell us what you're doing.
Well, basically what happened was, so we moved here and we got into the, you know, the social life here. And I was telling a friend of mine, I said, you know, we'll go out to the Garden Bar, which is one of our favorite spots in town, or Z's, or one of the other spots that we'd go to watch a sporting event on the screen, or, you know, have a beer, have lunch, have dinner. And we'd meet people, because oftentimes we'll go sit at the bar, Belinda and I, because we want to chat with other people rather than, you know, just sit on our own. You know, we're pretty social. So we'll go sit at the bar and we'll chat with other people. And I kept meeting all these really interesting people from all over the world, right? This is a place that attracts a different breed of person, people who are adventurous and out of the box thinkers, and people who take risks. So we were meeting all these interesting people. And I told a buddy of mine, I said, yeah, it's amazing all these people I've met in the conversations and the lives that people have lived. And he said, you should do a podcast. He's like, you've got all the equipment already. I said, yeah, I should do a podcast. I never really thought about that. I've never been an interviewer. I've never done this before. I've done voice work, but I'd never interviewed anybody. And so I started thinking about it, and then COVID hit, and you know, I thought, well, this is a good opportunity to tell some stories. And people are, there's a captive audience right now. People are at home and they're more apt to listen to longer format things. So I said, yeah, I should just go for it. So started this podcast, and it was just, the concept is pretty straightforward. It's just talking to people who have really interesting stories. So it started with talking to local people. You know, one is, you know, my trainer is a former Navy SEAL. There's a lot of stories there. I met another guy in town named Frank. Don't use his last name on the podcast, but he was a corrections officer at prisons in California for 31 years. You know, there were people who lived on the block that he was in charge of. Who, you know, one of them was part of the Manson family, the famous Manson family, the guy named Tex Watson, a few other people were high profile people that had been, you know, murderers. So obviously lots of stories there. So I started talking to people like that, that I met down here. And then I was talking to people who work in the entertainment business back home, and it's just kind of evolved. Now I'm just trying to talk to all kinds of different people from all kinds of different backgrounds. Last week, I chatted with a young lady who is a singer songwriter and who's also the anthem singer for Toronto, the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is our big National Hockey League team. So that was cool talking to her. And then right now I'm in the midst of working out the details to chat with someone that a lot of people would know, Tommy Chong of Cheech and Chong.
Yeah.
You know, a well-known actor and comedian and a marijuana activist, which is, you know, a big topic right now is a lot of countries are starting to legalize, like they've legalized cannabis in Canada. There's a lot of U.S. states that have legalized it. And we're seeing that a lot of countries are thinking of changing their laws because of all the benefits of that those products can provide to people who are, especially people who are PTSD and were, you know, quite ill. It could be helpful. So he's been an activist for a long time. I'm going to chat with him about what it's like to have the world kind of seeing it his way now after all these years. So those are the kind of people that I've been chatting with. And it's been really interesting to find out more about all these different characters that I've met. And now because I'm doing the podcast, now I'm getting the chance to meet because of the podcast.
Good on you for doing it. I can relate to the fear of thinking, oh, I'm going to make a podcast and people are going to hear my voice. And anyway, those are fears that I went through before starting this thing. And then all the things you have to learn to make it happen and get it out there. There's like a long list of study.
Yeah. So yeah, the podcast is called Cool Story with David J. McNeil, and it's pretty much available everywhere. Podcasts are streamed, as we say.
We will have a link to access the podcast as well on our website when we create your show notes page, mate. So
yeah, and you'll have to come on and be a guest too to talk about what it's like to do your own podcast and specifically talk a bit about what the topic is of your show.
Would love to, mate. Would love to. Would you consider living in Costa Rica full time?
Absolutely. And that, you know, the always in the back of our minds, that was the plan. But at this point right now, I'm still working and I'll be working for many years to come. I don't even know really well whether I will fully ever retire because I enjoy what I do. But the plan is to keep working. I'd love to go back and work on more, television and film in Toronto. But at some point the plan is to live down here, all year. I don't know if it'll be in this condo that we own or whether we may be at that point. If we're going to live here full time, maybe we buy a house. But we'll see. But that is definitely in the back of our minds for the future.
David, where can people find you online?
Find me on Instagram at David J. McNeil. I'm also on Facebook. I have a Twitter account for the Cool Story with David J. McNeil podcast. I don't have a personal account on Twitter anymore. But those are the three main places that people can find me if they wanted to connect.
David, last question. Do you have any suggestions for people considering Costa Rica as a place to live?
You know, we've been talking a lot about this on social media. I've been on other podcasts. There was a big piece done for a big magazine in Toronto that featured us and a few other couples talking about people who were digital nomads. So a lot of people have heard mine and Belinda's story and have been interested and have followed up with me about what it's like to live here. And we have one friend who's come down and bought here since we've been here. We have another friend who's planning on coming down with his wife and son at some point when things get better to look at buying a second property here. And we have a few other people who have been talking about coming down and checking out as well. So you know, the positive, you know, energy and conversation that we've put out into the world about what it's like to live here is reverberating. And people are hearing it and people are curious to come check it out. And I think what's really important to point out too is that with COVID-19, that there's a bit of a silver lining that's happening. And that is that right now all over the planet, employers are telling people to stay home and work from home. And so two things are happening. Employers are realizing that they don't need as much brick and mortar and they can save money by having people work from home. They're also realizing that their employees want to do a good job and want to hold on to that position and get everything done working from home, that people aren't sitting around watching soap operas in the afternoon instead of working. People have a deadline and they get their work done. And if you have a good employee, they're going to do their best job from home as well. So I think a lot of people are looking at the situation right now and thinking, you know, they used to say, well, you can work from home. Well, now you can work from anywhere, right? So I think we're going to be seeing people coming down here who are closer to our age, who aren't retired people. You know, I just turned 50. So I have a feeling that we're going to see more people who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s come down and get a place here and at least stay here for half of the year and work from here all winter. Because why wouldn't you if you could? You know, rather than being cooped up in your place in Toronto or wherever you live in the winter. So I think there's going to be a shift that's going to happen because of COVID-19. And if it does, and we can maybe reap some benefits from it after this horrible situation, I suggest we take it. we take advantage of those opportunities that came from this.
Well said, David. Very great way to finish this off.
Yeah.
Pura vida.
Pura vida.
Here's a sneak peek of the next episode.
In episode 20, we sit down with 39-year-old Madeline Carlson. Hailing from Sweden, Madeline talks about the transition from materialistic Monaco to chill Costa Rica, the benefits of living in a small and connected community, and why Nicoya Peninsula is one of the world's 5 blue zones.
I also had some people who are like, you're out of your mind. Like, do you realize that you're moving to a third world country? Like, the comfort that you have here, the safety that you have here, do you even have a health system over there? Like, what's going to happen to you? Like, you know, and I went ahead and did it anyway, and I couldn't be happier. Like, and I sometimes walk around when I'm in San Jose, I walk around the nicer parts of San Jose and I'm like, this is nicer than Monaco. This is cleaner than Monaco. This feels better than Monaco. This is much better organized than Monaco. And I kind of laugh at the people who told me, like, you're moving to a third world country. Like, you know, it's going to be dangerous and it's going to be dirty and there's no...
If you'd like to watch the video of this episode, go to YouTube and subscribe to the Move to Costa Rica podcast.
If you enjoyed this conversation, please rate, review, and share it with your friends on social media. For a full list of show notes, episodes to your inbox, information on becoming a guest on the show, and how to support the show on Patreon, head to www.movetocostaricapodcast.com. Remember, new episodes are released every Thursday by 6 a.m. Costa Rica time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, pura vida. We'll be right back.